Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
James Bonding Podcast with Matthews, Myra, and Gorley. Matthews, Gorley, and Myra, podcast of James Bond. Matthews, Gorley, and Myra, podcast of James Bond.
James Bonding Podcast.
Well, Matt.
I feel weird without our we're on different turf here.
That's right. We're here at the Earwolf Studios in our last official episode of the run of James Bonding. We'll be back for whatever the Bond signal goes up in the sky.
Yeah,
we'll be needed. But this is the last of the official run, and we're very glad to have Paul Scheer here.
Paul, welcome back to our program.
I am so excited to be here to talk about this movie. We had planned to talk about this movie
long ago.
I had even bought tickets for us to all go see it, and then I was I pulled to New York or something, and I could not see it with you guys. But I had seen it now twice.
I've seen it three times,
four times.
Okay, not bad. Well, I'm very excited to talk to you guys about this movie because I feel like now with some time pass, I've heard. Okay. The James Bonding, where you guys first came on, the initial reactions, the pre-going, again. Yeah, so I feel like I've lived with you guys.
Yeah, we've really milked this for all it's worth.
Yeah, four times, but I should say I fell asleep in one of them because I was at the IPIC where they give you a pillow and a blanket.
I know. The IPIC makes you
and
tired.
And fried food.
And a cocktail.
Yeah. I fall asleep a lot at the IPIC. It's the best, most expensive nap you'll ever take.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Really, like,
but I love it.
You shouldn't watch
too.
Movies there. You shouldn't be there to watch movies.
I go there exclusively now to nap and to watch movies.
Oh, it's ridiculous because they put you in the most comfortable chairs and they give you blankets and pillows.
The IPIC to me is the best theater of all time. As a parent now, it's amazing because you can't often do like dinner and a movie. Here you can do everything. There's a bar, there's
You're
dinner, there's a movie.
Always rushing if you try to make a dinner.
Yeah, that's
exactly.
Very true. Yeah.
And the food there is pretty good.
Yeah.
They have artisan pizzas.
Uh-huh,
But yeah, the side effect is that my wife has never made it through an entire movie. Never.
It's also all the food is finger food. Because they don't want you clanking forks and knives against the plate.
Which is so much better than like what the Draft House does.
Yes.
Like when they serve those little nachos, it's great because each nacho is like perfectly bite-sized and it's all – everything that's on it that you need it.
You don't need to futz around there. They really have – nailed how to nap in a movie.
Well, that's the Spectre cast, guys. Thanks
so much for joining us. We'll see you at the IPIC.
Hey, before we even begin, Matt, I have a surprise for you.
Oh, you do?
I have a little Christmas present.
What?
That's right. Now, a wonderful, wonderful listener of this program, Kyle Steed, did some amazing artwork.
Okay.
And this came in a while ago. That's how long it's been since we've done an episode. So I took it.
Yeah.
I got it printed up.
Oh, my God.
And framed.
Oh, my.
And when this comes out, check my Instagram, Matt Gorley on Instagram, and you'll be able to see what Kyle Steed has done. It's incredible.
I am looking forward to seeing this right now.
It is a poster.
Oh, my God.
For James Bonding. With you and me painted in like the most classy professional manner, but it's also rife with inside jokes from the podcast.
Take.
Pigeon double take.
Kananga balloon.
I've got a Starbucks Valencia orange refresher martini. You've got a straight up Vesper.
Yes.
Your watch.
Oh, my God.
Now, my only question is, I'm looking at this painting, and I or picture, I love it. It's amazing. Is that supposed to be Katie as Moneypenny?
I believe so.
I love it.
There's also a chamois leather holster in the drawer there, our little book of notes.
Oh, my God. That is beautiful. Yeah,
it's awesome. And I forever now will picture the two of you being dressed like that in a room like that recording a podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, if we ever.
The quilted door, which I vow to have on my office door.
Oh,
there
my
you go.
God.
Merry Christmas.
Matt, it is a beautiful, beautiful piece. Who made that again?
Kyle Steed.
There's Tabasco.
That's right. Yes.
Kyle Steed sounds like a character that you might run into in a James Bond movie. You have to talk to Kyle Steed.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Kyle, thank you very much. Matt, thank you. Paul,
I didn't do anything, but just appreciated it.
So we're here to talk about Spectre. We're giving us the full James Bonding treatment because we've all seen it now a bunch of times.
Remember how much Skyfall resonated when it came out? No one's talking about Spectre.
No one's talking about Spectre.
No.
Because of Star Wars,
Spectre,
too, I think.
I feel like the vast majority of people that I have talked to...
I'd say mixed reviews.
It is, well, very mixed, as I said earlier. 64% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
As opposed to 93% for Skyfall.
I will say that I fall in the 63% camp because it's weird. It's a movie, in my opinion, that when you watch it the first time, I left the theater being psyched and fulfilled. And then it just starts to eat away at you. Things that I'm like, oh. And then it just like, and then you're left for me, where I go, I really fluctuate. I go, I don't know if I liked it.
That's what happened to me with Skyfall. Obviously.
Oh, that's really? Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
See, and I go back and forth because then I'll be like, well, that was really good. I don't know about that. And I want to, and this is to me like a fanboy moment to be able to discuss this movie with you guys because it's a way I always want to discuss a film, but you can't have a forum to really get into it.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I think that a lot of people were reviewing this movie unfairly. And they were in the sense that I feel like a lot of them were just trying to look at it as a movie.
How dare you?
Which
Hold on. Yeah.
Hang on. Just hear me out, guys. It's not a movie. It's a James Bond movie.
Right.
That's the difference here. And you feel like you're going to this movie expecting, if you're a fan of the franchise, you're expecting a certain something. And what you're expecting is for them to deliver the things you love about James Bond. And I think Spectre, for the first time in
This is my argument with
all
it.
That.
See, my argument is it is all condiments and no meat. Like it is to me, it's like, yes, they give you everything that you want to see, which are, you know, these James Bond tropes that we have not gotten, like from the secret lair to, you know, Blofeld and the Q stuff. There's a lot of very cool tips of the hat to what James Bond used to be.
Yeah.
And I feel like that kind of like. It glosses over because it's like, oh, I'm so excited about blank, blank, and blank.
Yeah.
But then it doesn't connect as good as the other ones. And I feel like the series has been maturing past that with these like nods of, you know, like tip of the hat to all these James Bond things. But and that's – so this is the issue that I have. But my bigger issue is in the third act.
Well, it's – okay.
Third act is where my issues lie.
We'll get to the third act when we get to the third act. Right now we're talking about the movie as a whole. I need to figure out though if it's – because – before Spectre came out, Matt and I sat down. We did a podcast where we discussed the things that we'd like to see from this
100%.
Movie. And I believe they ticked off nearly every box that we had. We wanted to have James Bond get some gadgets. We wanted him to have a nice cold opening. We wanted him to go on a mission. We wanted him to not be sort of behind the eight ball on things. We wanted it to be more of a traditional James Bond movie. And I feel like this movie delivered all those things. Am I wrong?
No, I agree with you. In fact, don't get me wrong. I like Skyfall. I think it's artfully done. It's done amazingly well. But there are huge
Skyfall is pretty.
Huge plot holes in there. And now hear me out on this. So I thought it also rode the line between kind of winking at Bond and still staying within that realistic version that Daniel Craig's franchise had set up.
Yes. Right.
And that's where I got at times a little bit like, wait, what are they doing here? Spectre goes to the other side and commits, I think, to classic Bond. It felt like I was watching a Bond I had seen before, and I mean that in a good way.
Yeah.
But then something I realized. There are some There are some strange leaps in Spectre, but they all make linear sense to me. Skyfall's – Silva's plan in Skyfall, when you go home and think about it, falls apart immediately. This movie somehow fixes Skyfall because it's Blofeld behind Silva, which many people don't like. They think, oh, that's stupid. He's been behind everything from the beginning.
Yeah.
But if you put Blofeld behind it and he's operating all the systems that unlock the doors when they're under the subway in London, suddenly I can start to believe Skyfall.
Oh, interesting. So then you're saying it's not a lone hacker who's managed to pre-program
timing,
all these things to open and all the timing.
And you've got Blofeld behind it all. That makes a little bit more sense
to me. But it feels to me like retroactive writing.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely.
You know, because it's like, because we start off obviously going at Casino Royale. At that point, they were not sure they could get the Spectre, right?
Like,
they
couldn't get what it feels like? It feels like sometimes when they'd try to wrap up Arrested Development, they'd go, well, this was this, and this was this, and this was this. Huh?
Definitely.
And so I felt like it kind of cheapened it. It was like, oh, wait, they're all connected? And then it felt smaller than, for me, it kind of had the opposite effect of like, oh, that's just like, all right. Like, I felt like dirty.
I thought that was so silly. I thought that was so silly to connect it.
Yeah.
It didn't need
the brother.
Well, to me, here's the perfect example of it. Not to jump ahead. I'm not jumping ahead.
Jump wherever you want.
All right. Well,
we've all seen the movie. Everyone listening has seen the movie.
My issue with it is, all right, so they do all that to, like, you know, connect it. And then, like, at the end, when he's in the old MI6 or, you know, the new MI6, like, they're basically like, who's the guy
that's exactly what I said to Matt. I was like, who set up a fucking laser jet?
All right. Put up the Silva picture.
Oh my God, you need me to get rid of the background of everybody's photo?
Definitely okay. That guy with the glasses and the bangs, you know, his little butler guy. Yeah.
Like, and I'm all for a good Bond, like a traditional Bond. I love James Bond. And I made the big jump in the iTunes world and I bought the $99 version because I was like, you know what? It's time. I feel like I'll get them all.
Yeah.
They're great. At $99 for 18 of them.
No, it's a good deal.
It's a good deal. And then I can go back and watch them in the moments that I want to watch them. Like I even did a little experiment before Spectre came out where I did a real experiment where I just like watched just all the cold opens like back to back.
Oh, very cool.
Which is like, oh, I just want to see that. And like, and it's easy to kind of just go on.
You're giving us new ideas for new episodes.
Yeah, that's a great
idea. Well, it's kind of fun because then you can kind of evaluate them in different ways. Yeah. And I had listened to something else. Oh, it was Edgar Wright made a list of his favorite James Bond movies in the order that he thought they should come out. And there was a Roger Moore one. For Your Eyes Only, which I had not really visited. And so I went back and I saw it, but it felt too adult to me when I saw it as a kid. And then I kind of grew out of Roger Moore and I only kind of revisited Sean Connery. So I was like, I went back to kind of check up on that one. And I fell in the octopusy camp of my James Bond world where it's sort of like, I know it exists. I've seen it maybe once, maybe twice, but I haven't.
Yeah,
like,
octopusy
haven't taken
for
it.
Me is sort of the one that I revisit a lot.
I
put that
too.
On a
that's
lot.
That's an old coat.
Yeah.
And, I like to put
and
on.
And Fear Eyes Only. That might be the James Bond movie I've seen the least.
Well, mine's definitely Tomorrow Never Dies. And
well,
let's keep
oh
it
yeah,
down.
I don't want to argue with you.
Yeah, the Pierce Brosnan ones. I don't know if I've seen those twice.
I think. Well, here's the other thing too. Under the grading system, we are grading Spectre of ticking all the boxes for James Bond movies. Tomorrow Never Dies hits them all as well. I've said this before.
You see, and that's my issue with it.
Yeah.
Like,
oh boy, you're about to win me over with what you're about to say.
No, but I mean,
my theory is now flawed.
Well, because it is. It is checking boxes without. I think it's sort of like it just seems like a paint by numbers. Like, we got that, we got that, we got that, and it's like, and the whole movie feels jammed in. And if you look at these Sony hack emails now. It's interesting because some of the notes that the Sony hack emails released about the film, they're not scandalous. They're just notes, and they're kind of good notes.
No, they are. They're right.
And it's like, oh, yeah, these are my issues with
expound
the movie.
Expound on that because I still haven't
They're mostly to do with the third act.
Okay.
Yes. I mean, if we're not talking real first draft versions of this, the John Logan version I think was basically – they're talking about after Purvis and Wade came on. And it sounds like they knew that the third act needed to be fixed. And it got fixed as much as it could. I think the story makes sense. But some of the choices, I think, aren't as good. But the first two-thirds of the movie, I think, is good. The only flaw I have with it is that the relationship between Madeleine Swann and Bond is good. I think they made all the right choices.
I agree.
But I don't think they gave you enough in between. And it's sort of my one complaint with the new Star Wars movie is you need moments for these big things that happen to resonate with the characters and for you as an audience member to take them in.
I agree, yeah.
You're not wrong about that on the Star Wars end of things.
Well, yeah, somebody said enough time.
Somebody said not to spoil anything for people out there who don't want to get spoiled for Star Wars. Like, is Star Wars The Force Awakens one story day? Like, I mean, like, if you like,
it seems like it, yeah.
It seems like it. It moves very quickly.
Yeah.
And this is where I will go back on my Spectre. I came down hard on it. Love the opening.
Mm-hmm.
Love a lot. I love Ralph Fiennes in this movie. I think he's great.
A genius. So
I love how they bring in M. I love that thing. I love the Monica Bellucci. Mm-hmm. I really am getting into it. I think where it started to go off the rails, where things got wobbly. Well, this is one nitpicky thing was like the mustache twirling kind of guy. Like, you know that guy's a bad guy. Like, from the minute he's in M.I. From Sherlock. Like, like, you know, like, you're like, all right. Like, they didn't even try to hide.
Like, the man's eyes are fucking, shark's eyes or a doll's eyes.
Just like LL Cool J said in the Deep Blue Sea song, shark eyes.
Imagine if they cast that guy with a, like, classic genial British. Oh, I say, oh, it's so nice to meet you. And, you know, that would have been.
Can amazing. I tell you my pitch for it?
Which yeah,
I
think,
and this would have tinkered with the Bond franchise.
Getting the Broccoli's on the phone. If this is any good, I'm going to put the call in.
If it was Moneypenny who was betraying everybody, and she was like,
I think one step away from that because the guy in the bed, they never show the face. And I feel like there are deleted scenes where she was sleeping with Denby.
Oh,
because his voice sounds like his. They only show the back of his head.
I just
and, oh, also oh, when he gets busted by M, like M kind of gives him his first like signal that he knows what he's up to. She follows M out, but she kind of pauses and gives him a dirty look, and that could be just I don't like you, but it also felt
maybe
like
they have a relationship.
Something.
I just wanted to be. I think I wanted that to be a little bit more of a twist. I think as an audience member, and even like Rafe, everyone seemed like they hate this guy. Like, whereas I think it would have been better to be like, oh, it's somebody inside, and if Blofeld had this many tentacles, you know, to really get people.
Nice,
it wouldn't
like what
be,
you said there.
Yeah. Like, it wouldn't be the person who's like the newly implanted person in the world. It would be someone that you hadn't noticed.
Well, I love that line in Quantum of Solace where Judi Dench says, everyone says they have people everywhere, but you don't actually believe.
Right. Yeah. And they seem to be banking on the twist coming from the fact that Franz Oberhauser is Blofeld, but that means nothing to anyone.
That's like that fan service.
That's a useless,
and I understand,
yeah. useless
but
twist.
I think it, well, who, I don't think it's as bad as the Khan fan service because obviously it's for the fans. Yes, I get it, but it's not like.
Oh, don't get me started on that movie.
Oh yeah,
but you're right. It's like because it's presented like what they should have done is just thrown it away.
Yeah.
I don't know. My name is, you know, my name is Blofeld. Like, it shouldn't have been like, but it's like, ba, 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 ba.
It kind of is. Like, you know. It wasn't,
right.
It wasn't
no
like,
one in that
Bond doesn't react to it like, oh my God.
That name means nothing to anyone.
It was, but I thought in the context, he just said, oh, that's not my name. I hate my father so much. I'm going with my mother's bloodline. So at least they had a line to acknowledge it, which is more than you got for Khan.
Yes.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Well, here's my question, too. And this is the thing that I go back to when I talk about this movie, because this is where I go. 64% is about right for me because I'm like, oh, I like it. Oh, sometimes I don't. And it's wavering on certain moments because I do like all the boxes that you checked. To me, when Bond sees Oberhauser in that meeting room, right? There's no like thought there. I don't read on his face like, oh shit, that's my brother. Like, you know, like,
oh, what? I got that.
Did you get that?
Did you get that?
Yeah, I mean, definitely get like something's affecting him.
There's a slow pull and wider eyed Daniel Craig than we've ever seen before.
Okay, then I
you
felt
might have
like,
sneezed.
All right, that was my issue. Was like, I just felt like there was never this I felt like the connection between them never felt like – like the head-to-head should have felt like it just felt just separate.
I agree with that. After that initial thing and then when they meet, you do want Daniel Craig to have a little bit more like familiarity with
like
him
you're
or
my
some history.
Yeah.
But I feel like again, they're brothers for what, 2 years? Do you know what I mean?
Right.
There's that. Also, here's a weird thing. The timeline of this is all fucking weird.
The 20 years?
20 years.
And they show a picture of him and he looks like he's 17?
Yes.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
So what they're saying is how, like, they're saying James Bond is 37 years old?
No, yeah, about that.
No, because they show he's a guardian. He gets guardianship when he's 12, but he was born in 68.
Oh, I have a question about this too, by the way.
Yeah.
Well, good, figure out the age first.
Well, so that would put it. That he's was, so basically that it, Daniel Craig's age. His Bond is, according to like the okay, records they
right,
show.
As they do, as I showed
I
you
think
when I
just
said
showing.
All those.
Like the only way to justify that is they're showing an old picture of Franz Oberhauser when he died, but he would have had to have been about 30 when he died. But that picture, he just doesn't look 30.
No, but it also doesn't make any sense that a 30-year-old would be so annoyed at this little kid. Do you know what I mean?
Well, but right.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, you're right.
You're a grown adult. What are you mad at?
Yeah.
Well,
and why would Bond wouldn't even be around anymore? He would have been into the service.
Go ahead, Paul.
Let me ask you guys this. Am I to believe that James Bond's parents were killed by an avalanche and then James Bond's step-parents were also killed by an avalanche?
You're absolutely correct.
That's lazy. Guys, that's lazy. Like, that bums me out.
But
like,
you don't think, well, one of them's a natural avalanche and I could see Franz Oberhauser going, I'm continuing the theme.
Oh yeah,
I'm going to. You know, he's the author of his pain from
all your pain.
And oh man, well, and to go to your point about checking off the boxes, this is how I can. This is the only way I can articulate why I don't like that box is being checked off.
Yep, listening.
The chair at the end that he's in, Bond is in the torture. Is obviously a nod to Goldfinger, right? Like, I mean, we're putting him in that position. Yeah. And all that sort of stuff, which is cool. Like, oh, that's cool. That's like the new cool Goldfinger thing. But then when they get him in that chair, it's weird because then they stick him with these needles that don't seem to do anything to him at all.
Yeah.
So then you're saying, well, James Bond's superhuman. But yet you set up very early on that he's got these nanobots. Why don't you just put a line in there like early on to be like, oh, and these nanobots will like kind of help you, like if you get like, you know, instead of just being a tracking device, like let's like justify why he's not superhuman.
I think that's it.
That pushes it into.
But you think that like a man getting these things?
I hate that you have to like parse this much, but I think it's there in the movie because the first one is he's just drilling his tooth to hurt him.
Okay.
Yeah.
The second one is if I find this nerve, you'll forget her.
Oh, he says if I find it, I can't.
Yeah. I like.
Oh, okay. I thought he was like I am getting that nerve.
No, he said if I find it, it'll you'll forget any. You won't remember anybody's faces. And then the other thing is that like you just have to assume that he's going to keep going until he gets that nerve. So James.
Okay.
Bond's
all right. So that again, in my two viewings of it, I thought he was hitting those nerves and that he should have been blind.
No, because that would have been bullshit. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So then why create that device? Okay, but yeah. But I feel like those were, I don't know, you're kind of doing one thing that's a little bit like an homage, but then you're doing something else that's like I didn't find that whole interaction between them at all fulfilling. I like the moon rock, all that shit. Like I was like,
that's where it starts to fall apart a little bit.
Yeah. And it's just sort of like I want these guys to go head to head. I like Silva when he went head to head with Bond. Like,
yeah.
I liked the way he was brought in and I liked the way that they
This is obviously leading to something else. So it fell apart for me in the third act a little bit. But the final thing where he decides to go with Madeleine Swann, I really liked for a change on a Bond film. I really liked it too because I think they clearly are setting it up to be on Her Majesty's Secret Service. Well, they'll either be married or together and then Blofeld will kill her.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. And, as I went on this podcast to talk about on Her Majesty's, so I'm all on board.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think we should talk a little bit about the earlier part of the movie.
Yes.
Like, let's talk about the things that we all enjoyed. I think
– best open, right?
The open was good.
I like it more each time I see it.
I think it needed – well, I just needed like an explosion in the background or something.
More of a button. We talked about this. Yeah. But then the next few times I saw it, it worked better for me.
I love it. Yeah. I love it just because of the scope of it. I love like being at like whatever the March of the Day of the Dead.
Yeah.
I just love the visual of that one shot was so pretty. I had a hard time the first time understanding why the whole building exploded when he shot in there.
I know. It's not clear, but when you figure it out,
Then I'm like, all right, I buy it. But, like, it is a little bit like, huh.
I have a hard time figuring out how not everybody was killed when he blew up the building.
Yeah.
Well, even that's their – like, they really do take their pains to make everything make sense in this movie, which I think Skyfall doesn't have. So you see the guys see the laser in the smoke.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And then – Bond shoots the other assailants, and then even looks. They show him change his field of vision down to the suitcase. So he shoots the suitcase.
Which it blows up.
Right before that, you see Sciarra run off a little bit. So I know it's like still a little unbelievable, but they at least address it slightly. And I feel like that's Sam Mendes going, all right, I got to make sense of this on the day.
Well, I think this whole movie was made a little bit like that because I have a friend of a friend who was an editor on this film.
Inside information.
And apparently Sam Mendes is a very collaborative director. Mm-hmm. So they had this giant roundtable with the script. They said, okay, here's a couple things that we need to do. We need to go to snow. Their script was already done. Like, how can we go to snow? Because we have not been in snow for X amount of movies. We need to go to snow.
So World was not enough last movie.
So that was like – so that was – there were a couple mandates that they kind of had to hit. I also
– Oh, Die Another Day.
Oh, shit. I've wiped that one from my brain.
That's the one with the Invisible Hotel or the Ice Hotel?
That's the Ice Hotel,
And the Invisible Aston Martin. And then I was in Mexico shooting in that theater that blew up. And we had to – we had to be done at a certain time because Bond was coming in to blow up that theater.
And wait. Theater? What do you mean?
Well, that's the thing. It's – that they blew up is a beautiful – Broadway-esque theater. Oh. You don't see the inside of it. You're just seeing the building of it. So I thought there was going to be like a cool scene a la like Mission Impossible where they were going to – I would like to talk about Mission Impossible and compare it to Spectre 2 because I feel like they're the same exact movie. Rogue Nation and this are very similar movies. But I thought they were going to be in a theater. I didn't know how they were going to blow up the building. But that was also something like that they had gotten word that they could blow up a building. It was retroactively –
Well, Mexico pulled out all the stops to get them down there.
100%.
But that's interesting because I read the early version of the script and that
– When?
Phil Noble Jr. sent it to me. I'll send it to you. But that's in there. Only is it in there, it is like detailed – so detailed to what you see in
– Oh, wow. Okay,
and I wonder if it was like retroactively –
Well, maybe it was just – maybe it was more the fact that Mexico was just like championing. Well, this movie is in Mexico, so who knows?
No, Mexico was like, please do this. What do you need? You want to blow something up here? How about this theater?
Yeah.
I don't think they knew it was that building. But
maybe. Well, I think they made a play. I think – well, when I was down there, the people were saying that they made a big play to get Bond down there.
Like,
they were
huge tax credit.
Yeah. It felt to me – and that maybe it was my interpretation – that they felt like they were going like – We wooed them like the Olympics to come here because they were very excited. That took forever apparently to set up and shoot. That's what they were saying. Again, these are all hearsay. I don't know. The editor is for sure that they needed to go to snow.
I wonder how many of those mandates they had, and I wonder if it helped or hurt.
Well, it can't help.
Did they come from Broccoli and Wilson?
Starting with the story and you're having to retro-engineer your story around certain parameters that are arbitrary, that can't help.
I think sometimes it does because it's the whole thing of
But
like,
that's the checking the boxes thing, which is like I like a snow in a James Bond movie. Yeah. And it was fun to see. Like I don't mind that people had an issue with their clinic being in the snow. I was like, well,
that was just a nod to
Honor Majesty's Secret Service.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the movie was Honor Majesty's Secret Service.
That's what I kind of felt like,
In some ways,
Not some ways. In all lot
well,
of ways.
Also, Irma Bunt was originally in it, in the script too.
Really?
Yeah. So they were clearly heading that way.
Well, it's interesting to me. I mean, this does throw the whole – I guess we're just all satisfied that the timeline of James Bond is what it is. Whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Right.
Doesn't matter if this James Bond has been married or not or whatever. So do you think Daniel Craig has been married?
His Bond character? No, he clearly hasn't.
Okay.
I mean, there's no two ways about it.
I don't think that there's connective tissue. I think whenever you have a new Bond, it's like a doctor. That's the way I view it. It's a Doctor Who. We are hearing this story from – these are the memories of this guy.
But all of the previous Bonds were one person.
Yes.
They take pains to connect them.
They were all one
This
person.
Is a oh, reboot wow. of the series. It's the first time they've rebooted it, if you don't count Never Say Never Again.
But it's
wow,
so
that's
so weird.
A piece of the Pierce Brosnan was married.
Yes, to Tracy.
I don't know that they ever bring it up in Brosnan's, but they do in Dalton's and they do in Roger Moore.
Yeah. But it's interesting. The thing about the whole floating timeline of James Bond, it is – I feel like they – having rebooted it, they have just moved too fast with it. Do you know what I mean?
I agree.
Like they've now made this guy retired.
I know.
Yeah.
It's the bullshit of Batman. It's the bullshit of The Dark Knight Returns where like You were only Batman for like 2.5 years, and then your girlfriend gets killed, and you fucking go hide in your house for 8 years?
But
that's
then you think
Batman.
About yeah. it, too, that they'll probably have – we talked about this yeah. after Spectre. They'll have to end this storyline and probably this James Bond with the end of Daniel Craig, because how does someone come into this – before you could step into Bond because it was always episodic. Now whoever steps into this is going to have to follow this storyline,
right.
this complicated storyline.
It's now serialized. Yeah.
They've got to reiterate
yeah. that it
again.
Wasn't before.
Yeah. And I feel like – well, that's my – again, with the end, I would have loved this James Bond to end with Blofeld escaping. I thought that would have been a cool yeah. anti-James Bond
well,
ending.
Yeah, because like they'll have to start the next one with him.
But that's, yeah, like, that's the cold open yeah. for the next one. I love
right,
it.
Right, I guess. Yeah,
but
I guess,
I'm with you. I think
it would have been cool. Like, it would have been fulfilling on some level. He didn't get his man. And then that continues the story mm-hmm. a little bit too, because this guy is so powerful. Like, I don't know. There was something like, – I feel like they kind of – they head in a direction and then they kind of just go, well, we're going to do yeah. what you expect it to be.
Yeah.
I think that they'll go a little bit more with the books and go to the last Blofeld novel, You Only Live Twice, where he has this like death garden where he grows like plants that are venomous and stuff. And Bond has a showdown with Irma Bunt and Blofeld, and he kills them with his bare hand. Like, I think he chokes Blofeld to death or something
oh, wow.
in their Japanese castle and garden or wherever they're
I
living.
Love it.
But I think it'll be after that, after he kills Madeline Swan.
But it's also like, do you think Craig's coming back? We think, right?
That's he's going to come back.
Yeah.
Right? And I like that. I did
I
like
so. I you did. Met him.
Yeah,
yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
He's a great guy.
By
Thanks
the way,
so
I have
really
to say that, you know, you told me to check out that episode of Nerdist, and it was fantastic because I've never seen him so light.
I know.
Right?
And fun.
I think of him as someone that is difficult in interviews.
Yeah.
And that was really refreshing. And I've got more out of him than I ever have.
Well, you realize it's like, oh, he's difficult to idiots.
Yeah.
Like,
he doesn't suffer fools.
You go around the world and you're answering the same stupid questions a million times for 8 hours a day, if not yeah. more. And you probably are just getting short with everybody. And yeah. I feel like when I was on there, I was like, oh, I love him.
Yeah, it was interesting to sort of take the approach with him of just, A, we had the luxury of having time.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
we had him for an hour, so we could just sort of slow roll it out. And it was good to talk to him, you know, not start off and being like, so what makes this Bond different?
Yeah, yeah. But like, the more important questions are like, what does he smell like?
He smells like a natural deodorant.
And ooh, then nice. Like yeah. when he, you know, when you meet people in real life, does he cut a tall figure? Does he feel shorter?
He felt taller than I thought he would because
really?
He's yeah. about my height.
Oh, wow.
But he just felt taller. Like when I stood up
I hear
to
that.
Shake
yeah.
his
yeah.
hand, he just – and he came in – he was dressed like you'd think James Bond would dress.
Yeah.
Like he had on a brown sweater with a tie
yeah.
and
yeah.
a brown vintage Levi jacket, leather jacket with like a France pin because that had just happened.
Yeah.
And like I'm like, oh, hello.
I imagine he sat like this and then ended up like this. Was he crossed his legs a
he
lot?
He sat like this. I sat – My entire posture throughout the episode was this. I just was back, and I put the microphone on my lap, and I just sat. He was right there. Hardwick was right there.
I love it.
And I just was like,
It was one of my favorite things to listen to. Yeah. And again, like, talking about Spectre again, it's like, oh, I saw it opening night at midnight. I'm so excited to be there. And
yeah.
there's so much – and I think Sam Mendes as a director, like that car chase that he does – when they're in the canals, or
yeah.
I think one of the I love that car chase because I felt like just felt like effortless, like it just felt smooth in a
it's
way.
It's a good car. I liked that the rounds weren't loaded into the guns.
Yeah,
and
I love that.
I did not like the music.
No, I didn't either.
No, but the music bit is very like Roger Moore-y. Yeah.
No, the most Roger Moore thing in the entire movie is the guy in the Fiat. That gets pushed
oh, yeah.
into the
yes.
parking spot. James, the airbag yeah. goes
James
off.
Bladen had a great, you know, you could have it either way. In the cold open, when he lands on the couch and you have a nice Roger Moore moment where he kind of goes, oh, all right. James was saying he should have landed right next to the couch and then looked at the couch and gone like, which would also be kind of a nod of like, my Bond doesn't land on the couch,
yeah.
but
yeah.
fuck it. Oh,
yeah.
God damn, why can't my Bond land on the couch?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think that would have been great. But and that old Italian guy just felt like.
Yeah, that was very Spielberg.
Interesting.
Too.
Interesting.
But I felt like there was something about it that in the moment I didn't cringe. Like,
yes.
And that's what I feel like about Sam Mendes. Like, I'm like, oh, I love the way that you do this. Like, it just feels smooth, and it looks cool, and it, like, and I think that seems like your issue with Skyfall. Like, it always looks good, mm-hmm. and I just felt like, I really liked a lot of it. I think it my thing starts to go downhill a little bit more. I feel like what I'm missing is something that James Bond doesn't do, which is go like. To Madeline Swan, could you believe that's my fucking brother? Like,
exactly.
I don't understand. Yeah. Yeah. This is driving me mental. Yes. Like, I want that. Like, I want that too. Moment.
I thought this guy was dead, and now he's here.
Yeah, I want that. Like, and I think it's hard not to have that. I know he's not supposed to do that.
When we might have talked about this before when we recorded, but when she says I can't do this and I'm leaving. Mm. And he just does his old, like, stoic Daniel Craig James Bond. Like, I've been hurt before. Women don't affect me. I would have liked at that moment for him to go, oh, fuck. Like,
yeah.
This time I'm losing another one. And that way we would have really cared that in the end he chose her, which I think we do. But it would have been nice to see him care in the beginning. And then we'd understand that he loves her because we've only heard her say it. And they haven't had a ton of character development to make you believe it.
Yeah. Well, it's a problem of a character that is an emotional void. Like, and I think that he's done a great job of like making that a realistic thing. And he's like, you know, so his highs aren't highs and his lows aren't lows. He's just kind of always at middle and sometimes a little bit more angrier, you know?
The psychology of James Bond is interesting. Like, he's just so – he's so detached all the time.
That's why I wanted this to break, and that way we'd know why he would go with her because – like Vesper, he's finally found another woman.
Who would you like more, Vesper or Madame
Vesper,
Swan?
Vesper, I'll always be
Vesper. I mean,
Vesper,
yeah, she's
I
amazing.
I took my dad to see this when he was in town because we have a Bond history. He really liked it. And then
– I got to go with Madeline, sorry.
Huh? Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. And so my girlfriend or fiance, Jesus, Amanda.
Hey.
Congratulations.
Thank
Congratulations.
You. She went to see it and we were talking about Casino Royale on the way home and both Amanda and my dad went, oh, we should watch that. And I was like, what? Really? Okay. So we put it on. And boy, that movie is so good and holds up. And after watching it after Spectre, I did like Spectre, but nothing can touch that movie.
Still
ranked
really
highest
perfect.
For me.
Yeah.
I feel like I feel like that shares similar DNA with Creed, which is a movie I really loved as well. And no spoilers there, but it's like, here's something that you like. Mm-hmm. And we're going to give you everything that you like from this thing, but we're going to make it real. We're going to make it now of the time. And cooler.
What do you think started this whole push to making things more realistic? Like what
Bourne,
was it?
I think Bourne. I do. Bourne and Batman. But the thing I can understand
But what was the push to make Batman more realistic?
I think because they've done with the Schumacher years.
And people I think people have heightened I think maybe after 9/11.
Yeah.
Like if you want to go like you know
That's
there was
very
a,
true.
You know, there was more of a there are more stakes to things and I feel like and also you heighten so much it's a photocopy of a photocopy of a photocopy. It's like all right, well like you get invisible Aston Martin. Yeah. It's like where do you go?
Yep.
Where can you go and where are these stories?
Well, the answer is Smart Blood.
I know.
I feel like when
Skyfall, everybody's like, oh, Skyfall is the best James Bond when Casino Royale is sitting right there.
Oh, Casino Royale is so much better than
I know,
Skyfall.
But people
say. Not that Skyfall's not good.
But it really
but
hit
Casino
with the
Royale
public.
Is amazing.
I think that, and I am a very big Skyfall fan. I think that Skyfall feels like, and it doesn't check the boxes that you guys have, which is like, it is what I think people, America, non-James Bond fans, just general, like, I'm interested, want James Bond to be. It's like, it's very simple. It's like it's cool. And it's like, and it looks beautiful, but it's like, they have no allegiance to the James Bond tropes. And so by having them not there, it's a very like, here's the bad guy, here's one guy. It's, this, you know, I don't know. I think it seems the easiest to get into for a non-fan.
Right.
That's why I think it was so successful and so kind of beloved.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because anyone can see it.
Spectre's creeping up. It's at $863 million worldwide.
Not bad.
Not bad.
I think it has to make what, like one? They wanted it to make
I don't
a
know.
Billion?
I forget. Yeah.
What did Star Wars make over the weekend?
I don't know.
I think it made five.
Five, yeah. Star Wars made a lot of money.
Five something.
Yeah, I mean, worldwide. It was crazy.
Yeah. Huh. Anyway.
But
Daniel Craig, did you notice the Daniel Craig cameo? Did you see it?
I have since heard that. I heard that before, but I thought it wasn't true. Then I saw the movie, and then I heard it was confirmed, so I'm looking forward to seeing it again. And
Also looking forward. You guys should do a special Force Awakens podcast.
We
can just shift this right
now. No, I was saying to Paul that I would love to do a Force Awakens.
That's another movie I want to talk about and get into in many ways.
But our producer has not seen the movie. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, yeah, we can't.
I'm glad I didn't say anything.
You can talk about it. I'm not going to spoil it for you. I'm not going to put my earplugs in.
No, no, no. It would be too much. I also feel like people may be wanting to listen to this.
Yeah, don't want that not spoiled yet. Yeah. Gotcha.
The idea, too, that the one thing that if you did see Star Wars, which I recommend to everybody, is to go online and look up all the rumors that were floating around, things I avoided for so long. Too. It's fascinating to see what was out there, what was kind of true, what was not kind of true, what were the set pictures that people hypothesized on. I went on a big wormhole last night just like looking at certain character pictures and leaked images.
What did you Google to do that?
I started to I knew that Slash Film has been very respectful about spoiler-free posts and then spoiler-filled posts. Uh-huh. So I went down that path a little bit. Then I went back. Then I went down Screen Rant, kind of collected a little bit of their rumor posts, and they kind of said, "All right, well, this is what, now you know. So this is what we reported on, and here you know, because nothing is wrong. It's just like here's a picture, here's a hypothesis."
The one thing that I leaked to me was wrong, and it was how the film starts. And I think it might have been an earlier version.
Well, that was Devin.
Mine. I knew that one too. I think is we're talking
was
about
that
this
a red herring.
Yeah. Well, I read a thing interestingly enough again about what the MacGuffin of the movie was, and that was interesting. Like a few of their ideas that were on the table and taken off. The one I think I can spoil here without wrecking anything for anybody is apparently there's a big rumor that Hayden Christensen was snuck in to Pinewood to shoot a potential ghost scene. That is not true. That did not happen. But that was
apparently Ewan McGregor recorded some dialogue.
Yes, that is now confirmed.
Yeah,
for Force Awakens.
Yes, it's there. And so did
it's
Frank
in the
Oz.
Movie?
Yep. Yes. And so did Frank Oz.
It happens in the
the
in
montage, Maz,
which there were some people online that were calling it a forceback instead of a flashback.
Oh, I like
and
that.
I wanted to punch everyone.
And also they manipulated Alec Guinness's voice, so they have new dialogue from Alec Guinness in there.
I can't wait to sit down.
I want to watch it again.
Take a nap at the IPIC through this film.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not a bad idea.
That's a good one.
What's your week like?
It's open.
Paul, you in town?
I'm always up for an epic movie. I am in town. I'm not going anywhere for that.
I now live 5 minutes from there, too.
You see?
It's so
boy.
All right. So we like the opening.
Yep.
I love Ralph Fiennes.
I love Ben in this movie. Q.
He's great.
Well, I love him.
He is so good,
movie.
And I love the way they introduced him, and I love how he's grown. That's what I do like about the James Bond movies.
He's now really taken ownership of the quartermaster department.
Yes.
Right? That's what I really liked about it.
And and you got to see, which is something that I love about James Bond, the walk through the Q department.
He picks up a gadget that they're not going to use.
Yep.
Yeah. Except that gun.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I love it. And I love – and this is like this is where the movie it's so black and white to me because it's like – it works in the way of they show you all this cool shit and they go and you get a watch. And I'm like, yeah, that's what you want it to be. Yes. You want to know it exists and you want to know. And then he gets a watch. So it's staying true to
guys. When
what
I was
we love.
Wearing Daniel Craig's, watch.
By the way, that was amazing.
I know.
You were wearing his watch, his shoes. I wanted to make sure I wrote down the name of those shoes. They sounded really good. The way
Crockett and Jones.
I haven't even begun to contend with my jealousy for this.
The greatest thing was when he spotted the peacoat that I had on the back of the chair.
He got every single thing.
Didn't he say he pretty much selects all that
yes.
for the character?
You know what?
But it was such a weird thing to see him lock eyes with me and then look past me and then
just
go,
to lock
who
eyes
makes
with him?
That
oh,
coat?
That's the question. I'm burying the lead.
Oh.
How deep were those swimming pool eyes?
They were – let me say this. First of all, there needs to be at least 4 lifeguards on duty because that shit is deep and there's an undertow. It's going to suck you right in.
God, yet it's crystal blue.
Eyes are ridiculous. They're ridiculous.
I don't get why people didn't like the Madeline Swann storyline. That's the one thing that I think a lot of people rejected. And I know it moved quickly, but I liked her. I thought she was great.
She was fantastic.
And beautiful.
She was gorgeous. Yeah. She was believable.
I also really, the more I watch it, the more I really like Christoph Waltz. I liked him in the beginning, but I also thought, oh, he's maybe doing his Christoph Waltz thing. He tones it down quite a bit, especially in his...
How would you describe a Christoph Waltz thing?
Can I try some of your delicious milk?
Monsieur? She's great. And they needed a little bit more development, but I liked the storyline. I liked all the choices they made up until.
And what I would say normally is like they were pressed for time, but they seem to take their time with this 2.5 hour movie. This movie is long.
It is.
It is long, but you need to squeeze in. You know, you're squeezing in. There's really like an A plot, a B plot, and a C plot in this movie. The C plot being the love story, the A plot being Blofeld, and the B plot being what's happening at MI6.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a sitcom 101 writing. I think my favorite scene in the film is actually Mr. White and Bond at the table.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Really good.
That's a great – and again, it was a great way to kind of – I like bringing him back. I like that character and where he kind of gone to. I thought that was great.
My wife was trying to clean the kitchen after a party, and I said that she was a kite dancing in a hurricane.
Got it.
I will never not have that in my head. Dancing.
He's everywhere.
What I love about this world too is like following that, like that character lives.
Yeah.
And where and what is he doing? And it's like there's a stakes to it. Because I feel like every Bond movie is like, and we kill the villains and we never talk about it again. And it's all, and I do like putting it all under one umbrella. I just felt like some of it was like shoehorned umbrellas. Like, that was in there too.
It's definitely true.
They didn't have Blofeld. And if they had Blofeld in Casino Royale, they could have planted
that seed and
driven that forward.
I want to say something. I think that the James Bond movies are better off for not having Blofeld for as long as they haven't had him.
I agree, but I will say there's also precedent for this because in From Russia with Love, they go, oh, that last movie, Dr. No, was done by this guy, Blofeld.
That's right.
So
they did
you could say that's a nod. I'm not going to give him that much credit. I do think you're right. They're like, let's shoehorn all this
together.
Because
it's like, Quantum is Quantum is Quantum. Like, I mean, like,
just
like,
keep it Quantum.
Yeah.
And change the name or
something. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They just a subset of Spectre.
But like, you see, that was
subsidiary?
The thing. But you see, like, instead of
Spectre,
and that's why I think, like, the fan service shit is a pain because, like, just make it like just go like, oh, that was like you, but they want to use Spectre. They want to say Spectre because it is cool.
You're right.
And it's and so then they have to like kind of ratchet it
back. I was on the edge of my seat wondering if they would tell you what the acronym stood for just to laugh out loud in the theater.
At the end of the day,
that would
though,
have been great.
And I had this a little bit with Star Wars. I was talking on another podcast about this, that Star Wars and James Bond, for better or for worse, exist before I grew into a critical phase.
Mm-hmm.
So not only it's one of the two things probably in life that I can go into these franchises leaving my criticism at the doorstep, but I also feel I just realized recently that I'm doing myself a favor of like, these aren't Godfather movies. They don't have to be brilliant. Why not give myself the gift of enjoying them? They're popcorn movies. And so here I am on a podcast where all we do is dissect these films saying I shouldn't
do
that.
But we do it with love. We do it with love.
Yeah, but there is something to Star Wars especially where I was like, yeah, there were some flaws, but remember, you were a kid when you saw Star Wars. If you watched it right now, you would find some major flaws.
There are always going to be flaws. And I feel like
there's one perfect movie. It's called Jaws. The end.
I'll say Casino Royale.
But I love these movies, and I love watching this one, and I love being there on opening night, and that energy of fans enjoying and wanting to see this thing. And no one does this action like this. And when you see it like in the Avengers, it doesn't feel real.
Yeah.
But – now, to bring back my other point, I really am a huge fan of the new Mission Impossibles after J.J. Abrams took over. And I think that this movie is very much plot-wise similar to Rogue Nation. I know I brought it up a little bit earlier, but if you look at them down the center, it's someone trying to shut down MI5 and make it more modern. Someone's trying to shut down the Mission Impossible force and bring it to the CIA. Then, both of those guys are like these – evil guys, and then one guy's on this mission and he's trying to hide it from the other guy. They're both doing that. Like, the only difference is that Jeremy Renner is a little bit more on Tom Cruise's side, but they pair up with, a very powerful female. There's a lot of similarities to storytelling.
Well, there's no doubt the current or Mission Impossible series are doing classic Bond better than Bond is now because it's not entirely going for that. But that Mission Impossible movie was like the best Roger Moore Bond movie I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's also like no one is going to touch Tom Cruise right now with his
literally with his
fucking stunts that he will do in real life.
Yeah, they're amazing.
Like it's crazy. It's also crazy that they're insuring him. I don't know if like Xenu's involved, but
probably
he seems to be just.
Well, I think if you do it enough, and you are the producer and you are the lead, and you can't get and the movie gets made because of your involvement, you can kind of call those shots. He's just not an actor for hire.
Well, I mean, if you remember in Mission Impossible 2, he's free climbing.
Yeah,
like, that's right.
At the beginning of that movie. That's where it started as far as I can remember.
Like, he's always up in the mix.
He's an on-screen adrenaline junkie, man.
Now, when I talk to him at the Nerdist podcast.
Okay, listen to that one now, too.
Don't. It's such a garbage interview.
Really?
It's such a fluff time thing. It's so weird because he is
right?
Like you cannot.
Right, you're not going to
ask him. Like he says on the podcast that he watches a movie every day. He loves movies. He has a theater at his house. So when you ask him what a movie he likes very recently is,
I did listen.
He
to
just
this.
Goes.
Yeah.
So many, you know, it's just I can't.
Oh.
Like it's that kind of thing, like where he's worried about.
Because they're probably all his own movies.
Maybe it's just.
I feel like you got him.
It's
like,
just Top Gun.
Did you get him around award season? I feel like it's like you don't want to say what they like and what they don't like, or it's so weird. Yeah. It's like I feel it's like, just be like, oh yeah, I watched Young Frankenstein last night. No one will argue with it. Great, fine, cool,
right?
Yeah. You wanted to see a Mel Brooks movie, like
that's great.
You know, like you know, but it's like I feel like they're very
so
like
weird.
Daniel Craig much more revealing. I loved Dave Bautista in this movie.
Yeah. Oh, he was great.
That was a fun villain. Again, like
great.
A great nod to it.
And potentially not dead.
Oh.
They may Jaws him.
I think they might Jaws him.
If they decide to go full bore with this reboot style, like this classic style, they may Jaws him back.
I hope they Jaws him and turn him good.
They may. I mean, he's clearly likable.
I'm just so surprised that Dave Bautista coming on is like this.
Yeah.
Great acting, action.
Well, he's great
sidekick.
With a mono. You know, by the way, he's doing it the right way. The monosyllabic acting guy, like or no words, you know. But watching Richard Keelan For Your Eyes Only just recently, that is one of the coolest scenes. And it's a Roger Moore movie, so it's always a little goofy. But like Jaws just rips apart a car. Like they're in a car.
Oh,
and they're
trying Spy Who Loved Me.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, The Spy Who Loved Me. I'm sorry. That's the one I was talking about. Not For Your Eyes Only is one there with the Italian guy
had,
climbing on the mountain. Sorry,
I had whited out too. I was like, wait, what is he talking about?
Oh, sorry. I messed because that's again. For Your Eyes Only and The Spy Who Loved Me also feel like one movie to me that I don't really
very similar.
I mean,
era.
I know the. I guess it was not. It was like 70s to be. I don't know.
Yeah.
It doesn't resonate with me. But I remember the night when they're in Cairo and all that sort of stuff. But that first introduction to him just ripping apart the minivan is so.
When
great.
They're at that weird outdoor Egypt light show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The pyramids. Did that actually happen? Because
I don't know.
I want to see that.
It was a huge question for me.
In fact, I think they shot during one of those, if I'm not mistaken.
Very similar to the View to a Kill butterfly show. Like, taking.
Do you guys want to shoot during the 3 p.m. or the 5:30?
Well, can we get into 3 and then if we miss something, we can get into the 5:30?
I will say this about Spectre. Same thing with Skyfall. I clearly need more time to fully, you know, like with a Bond movie, you almost need years to let it settle into the franchise before you can kind of pick it out, you know?
Well, that's why I even watching it a second time made me understand parts that I was like, when I walked out the first time, I was like, I walked out psyched. I had the poster because I got it because I was in the, in the middle of wherever I was. And I was, you know, and I walked out psyched. And then watching it, and then I was like, oh, but I don't understand this. And I read a couple things online, and people were like, meh. And then I was talking to people. I was like, oh, I don't know. And then I watched it the second time. I was like, oh, no, it's there. You just have to kind of dig.
Yeah,
like you're saying, it's there. It just is covered.
It should have been more.
The first bad review of it I had tried to read, in the first paragraph, the person says that James Bond conjures an airplane out of nowhere. And I just got really annoyed at that person because there's an establishing shot with the runway right next to the building.
Yeah.
Like, I just was like, pay more attention before you try to rip a thing apart.
And I also feel like the franchise is too smart for that. They're not doing anything like that.
Yeah.
Like, my issues are more story issues. They're not, like, Bond issues. And I feel like, whatchamacallit, too, the thing, the review that gets me is He's so uninterested. He's so checked out. Daniel Craig's so checked out in this movie, just going through the motions. I read that so many times, and I was like, I don't get that at all. Like,
well,
I feel like
you picked that up in the one scene where they're escaping the
fortress. Yeah, because he's just moving sort of slow, but I feel like it's both a character choice and maybe informed a little by Daniel Craig, but it does feel like the character's allowed to do that.
But then he got beaten. Didn't he break his leg or his arm on the movie?
Tore his ACL.
Tore his ACL, yeah. I feel like maybe he's like, I don't want to run anymore.
In the train fight.
I think that's probably what it is, yeah.
Well, I also think it's like the character, Daniel Craig's James Bond, has been he resigns in the first movie. Like, this is a guy who just like doesn't want to be there at all. He resigns in the first movie. Quantum, he's totally rogue, right? In Quantum?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he goes there after him and he's rogue. I'm like, he's like, I'm out of here.
I got to watch Quantum again.
Yeah. Skyfall, watch it back to back with Casino Royale. Yeah. Much better.
I think
it's
going to age a lot better than people remember.
And then in Skyfall, he gets shot in the shoulder and then decides, I quit.
He's always getting out of it. Now, we were talking about this before, and I was like, oh, yeah, he never wants to be James Bond. He's the only James Bond that doesn't want to be James Bond.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's why I thought, like, the setup, the ending of Skyfall, where he hands him a dossier and he says, are you ready to get to work? With pleasure. I was just over the moon. I thought, here we go. Finally, James Bond's going to go on a proper mission and do his thing. And he is going on a mission, and it's given to him by Judi Dench, by the way. Great job not spoiling that cameo for anybody.
Oh, yeah. That was great.
It was a nice surprise.
It was a nice surprise. It was great to see Dame Judi drenched. But the character then at the end of this movie where you're sort of getting your James Bond, he again chooses to leave. This guy has never...
But I like that.
This guy has never...
I like that because they've at least committed to the fact that he's reluctant to be, and he's basically only doing this because he lost Vesper at this point. He's like, fuck it, I'm never going to have a normal life. I might as well be a sociopath. And then he finally gets another chance at it and takes it, which I think if he would have not gone with Madeline Swan, it might have been more difficult because he kind of, I think from the beginning, his Bond wanted that. And now he has that chance again. And that's why I wanted to see him more upset when she walks away.
Well, but now don't you go like this and go, okay, well, if that is true, then we have to open up the next movie with Bond not in MI6,
yeah,
with this woman, and if she's killed, then it's like got to be like License to Kill or something, where it's like, or not License to Kill, View to the one with the one where he goes with Richard Davi, which was
License to Kill,
yeah, where he's like, I got to now go on my revenge mission, and it's not going to be a typical James Bond mission, and he's
again.
And then that's going to be the end of the Daniel Craig connection, and then they're going to have to start all over again, so we're not going to get. We're never going to get the James Bond mission that we like.
No, I think it's done, yeah.
Whereas, like, Mission Impossible, I think, has taken that baton and, like, we're going to do missions. Because I think, like, I remember reading a thing with Tom Cruise about why Mission Impossible didn't succeed. And he's – or I guess it succeeded, but what he didn't like about it. And it was a good point. It was like – thing is called like it's the Impossible Mission Force. They kill all of the people on his team, and then he's got to do it alone. You know, it's like, well, they've taken away the one thing.
That first one is a huge misstep. Plus, the bad guy is the leader of the Impossible Missions Force.
Yeah, it was right?
Yeah. So it's like you take away the one thing, and so that's the one thing that bums me out because I do feel like you. Like, let's just do a mission. Let's just see a mission. Yeah. Like, it doesn't have to be for revenge. It doesn't have to be personal. It's like, you are this guy. Like, and why can't a mission be as exciting as a serialized story? I think it can be.
Worried that they're going to start with Bond at home with Madeline Swan and M going, we need you one last time.
Yeah.
Come on this mission. And then she'll incidentally be killed or something. No, I think it has to be Blofeld kills her. And then the end to Daniel Craig's arc is he goes on a revenge mission, kills Blofeld, and maybe – even dies himself.
Oh.
Wait, no.
Yeah.
How many revenge missions has he been on?
Oh, just, like, that's the problem.
Like, just the Daniel Craig ones have all been like, obviously, Casino Royale ends with a revenge mission and begins with one.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, he's off the grid.
And that's what he is in Quantum. He's fully going after the people.
And then Skyfall,
kind of. Not really.
Yeah, I guess he's like, okay.
Skyfall is kind of the trope you don't want from the next movie. Skyfall is kind of like he sees Wolf Blitzer talking about MI6 getting blown up.
Right,
he's like, fuck, I got to go back.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've already done that.
Yep. But what happened to that girl? Like, what about – the girl that he fell in love with in Mexico, the one with the where like isn't that the beginning of Skyfall after he jumps off the train? Like,
is he in Turkey or something?
Yeah, Turkey. Like, what happened to that girl? Why didn't he?
What happened to the girl from Quantum of Solace? I mean,
yeah, but she that
character.
One was wonderful.
Yeah, I like that too.
That relationship's great. They don't have sex.
Yeah,
they just need each other to do their revenge missions.
But this is what I like. I like about Daniel Craig's character. I think we talked about this too. Is he fell in love with Vesper? She boned out and died and killed herself.
Well, she really screwed him.
Yeah. Then he goes to this next girl and kind of tries to kiss her, and she rebuffs him.
Yeah.
And then goes on to Skyfall, and it's not really about a woman. And then meets someone he really loves again, Inspector, and chooses her. So he wants to be with someone. I think. I think he wants out of this life, and that's something Bond has never been. And it's I think they shouldn't deny that.
But what does he think he's going to do? Like, does he think he can have a nice life somewhere? Wanted by everyone.
I thought that this would have been the best ending for Daniel Craig, in the sense that that's a nice button. Blofeld's caught, and he goes off into the sunset. By bringing it back, it feels like, okay, back to the drawing. Because it did feel like him throwing that gun on the bridge. I love that. I don't know. I thought that was cool. I thought that was a cool choice. If he's not coming back, I was like, oh, that's the end. Like, that's.
Yeah, did they do that because they want to set up a revenge thing, or because they truly didn't know if Craig was coming back? Because he's got another film in his contract.
Yeah.
Right.
So I have to believe that they're going, now we're set up to do the Honor Majesty's Secret Service idea.
But they just
did they elements did, of
but
it.
But they can't do that again.
No,
if
I'm just talking about
the last 12 seconds of.
No, I'm talking about killing the wife and having that, which has been
well,
in.
Well, what
like,
you're talking about now is Diamonds Are Forever.
But it's arguably the only through line of Bond previous to the Craig film.
Correct. Absolutely.
100%. And so I think it would be good to put that back in.
But,
and then,
yeah. But then I also feel like what Blofeld to me then becomes what? Because we see how the power struggle. Like, all right, so if he's in jail, we got to put him in jail for what? I mean, unless the movie takes place immediately right after, like the movie just starts, like,
which they've been fucking really on board doing.
Yeah.
Which I think that actually would help this, because you put Blofeld in jail for a little bit, and the way that he's going to be confined is going to be,
it's going to be the
like
fucking Magneto's chamber. Yeah.
So like you're not going to,
or they're going to put him like Jason Statham at the end of Fast and Furious 7. Like,
yeah, just, right. Yeah. Like, yeah. That one, that's
the most ridiculous,
I didn't see that one.
The most ridiculous jail cell ever.
Really?
It's hilarious. Like he's walking down a hallway, and there's like these little gun windows, like maybe like six on each side, each with like guns trained on him. And then he's like being flanked by The Rock and like armed guards putting into a small cell. Like, that's how it ends.
Yeah.
And it's like beneath the like the surface of the earth.
Yeah,
you know, it's like crazy.
Like, it's hundreds of feet below the surface. It's essentially the best like prison ever built.
Maybe the Lex Luthor with just a hot air balloon.
But I would like to say, I mean, I guess I feel like, because I feel like the power void would, like, because then you have to be like, well, Blofeld escapes, then he has to get back into power, because, you know, he, like, this is a group of criminals. Like, the minute he's gone, they're like, all right, who's next? You want to get in here? Like, yeah. I mean, they're not going to be like, all right, guys, he's back. Everyone back to your old positions. Like, right. You know, like, then he's going to have no power. Like,
they have written themselves into a corner for sure. But I think that may have come out of the fact that they're like, we don't have an ending. Let's just get something that'll work for this right now.
Right.
And they may be screwed.
Should we, like, call them and be like, we'd be glad to break the story for you?
Oh, yeah. Let us move on. This movie does have the feel of one guy wrote a draft. The people didn't like it. They brought in people that fixed a lot of it, but at the same time, now you have two voices on it, and so something isn't totally right, and then they brought a third person in, and it does feel like you're going in and out of three people's scripts a little bit.
So you have read the first version of this movie, the first draft?
No, I've read when Purvis and Wade came on board. I don't know if it's before or after the addition of Jez Butterworth.
What has Jez done?
Other than having a really great name, I don't know.
I feel like
he's like syrup and human body fluid all at once.
Don't you feel like two other people have looked at it that just are not credited? I feel like there's so many people.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Carrie Fisher like wrote, was it The Phantom Menace? Like, you know, like, but like, or, you know, which is a crazy fact.
Wait.
She did some dialogue.
Buckle the fuck up. Yeah. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Like, Lucas brought Carrie Fisher in to punch up The Phantom Menace, not The Force Awakens.
Because he loved Postcards from the Edge so much? Like, what?
Just wanted to bring some of that Carrie Fisher humor into the mix. Yeah. Like,
what?
The most
Can you pull anything out of that movie that could possibly be
Oh, my God.
No.
I'm trying to think of anything that has any kind of like.
I mean, this movie, spark. Force Awakens, essentially starts with a joke. It's amazing. Yeah. Like, it,
no god is worth two slaves, not by a long shot. That's probably. She
I bet I know what
she
it
was. She came with a Sebulba character.
I know what it is. You're a pilot all my life.
I bet she probably, like, George was like, I got to bring in a Jew to write this clearly anti-Semitic traitor that has slaves.
She just used that script to roll up tightly so she can snort cocaine out of it. Yeah, now talking about Spectre, I want to go see it again. And now the things that I like are bigger. The one thing that you guys clarified for me is very important. I thought that he was hitting those veins.
Right, yeah. He's not a Superman.
Because it seems like he's like bracing.
Well, it would hurt.
I mean, by the way, it would fucking really hurt. Yeah. Like,
especially the tooth.
Yeah.
One would hurt the most. Soft tissue or something down there.
But the tooth isn't like crazy in the sense of like, that's how they did dentistry for years before anesthesia.
It's a marathon, but you saw the marathon.
But
the
other thing, you just have to be as tough as a cowboy.
It's very Fleming to be doing that kind of torture.
Yep.
Yeah. I like that. I love how the lair blows up with a couple of bullet shots.
That was a Guinness Book of World Records. There's a YouTube video or something, you can check it out, where you see it all happen. It's incredible.
Oh, wow.
I thought that was CG.
Nope.
Not that it didn't look good.
That was
some of the structures CG, but it's amazing. That's two.
And it's the biggest explosion on film ever.
Two world records for the Craig films.
Yeah, most car flips.
Oh, wow.
Aston Martin and Casino Royale.
I love that. I love having the bass.
I did
those
too.
Are the things that like
was a good way
scratch
to do it.
Like an
somebody
itch.
Here has a DB9. Oh, there's one parked downstairs.
Oh wow!
Welcome.
Ackerman.
Yeah. I doubt it's the Earwolf. anyone here at the Earwolf thing? We still have to afford computers here.
Is it Cody?
Cody, you have a DB9? Aston Martin? No.
Do you know who has it? Is it Besser?
There's so many. You make it like Earwolf. You make it like everyone see her like in the parking. Like, hey, we're all hanging in the Earwolf office. It's one office in a giant complex.
Yeah.
Oh man, this movie. I want to. What's your favorite? Your favorite thing out of the entire movie? You could just distill it to one moment.
That's a good question.
I think for me, it's the Scooby Gang, which is when Q and M and Moneypenny are off on their little secret mission. I enjoy the Scooby Gang.
I like that too.
I loved it.
I like the idea of making Rafe, making him like part of the team. Like, he's not like just a person behind a desk.
Yeah.
And there's something so enjoyable about that. Like, fuck yeah, get in there. Yeah. And he's done that now twice where I'm like, it's exciting.
My favorite scene is the Mr. White scene, but I love the moment where Hinks kills that guy by thumbing his eyeballs.
Really?
Yeah, I did. I thought that was classic. I also, this is fan service, but it's so deep, such a deep cut. The fact that M's safe house is called Hildebrand Rarities.
Yeah.
Which is one of the few Fleming titles that hasn't been used.
Yeah, I don't think it'll ever be used, right?
Not unless there's a movie now about just his, it takes place in his safe house.
Hey, did you guys see Hildebrand Rarities?
Oh, yeah. It's right after Property of a Lady. An Arisico.
Property of a Lady.
007 in New York.
I think my favorite thing, and it's just because I feel like these movies always push something forward in the shooting. I think doing a one shot on that scale of walking down the street, going in the hotel room, changing the suit,
right,
getting up on the building. Like that.
That's
to
not
me,
continuous though, right?
Or that is.
No, it's three. Well, it seemed. Three as far as I could tell.
But it seemed until – I thought it was all the way until he gets to the roof.
It is, yeah.
That's not one.
Well, it looks like one, but they seam it at two points. When they walk into the hotel and you see the poster for Smart Joe's. And then at some point – when they whip pan away from the girl and he's out of his costume.
Okay.
Because also they've clearly gone to a studio at that point. When he's walking along the ledge, he's blue screened or something. I mean, there's a fuzz around.
That's the only thing
that bums me out a little.
Oh, I thought that was real. Then I take that back.
Is your seamdar as good as your wigdar?
Well, no. I will say maybe it isn't because I've been burned on this before because I thought for sure when those two guys fall through the window in Quantum of Solace, that was all CG, but they really did it. But they end up treating it so much in post-production that it looks like CG. So it could be the same thing.
I thought he was definitely on that ledge. I mean, if he's not on the ledge, I'm more upset about it. But I like the scope of something that big. Like, I feel like that's I feel like James Bond has been a very solitary, real, like, based in a lot more real moments, or at least that's my memory of it. And, you know, even though things are blowing up and things like that, but I liked him being with the people.
Yeah.
They did such a good job of immediately your eye goes to Sciarra walking down with the white suit. But then Daniel Craig, who should be completely camouflaged, somehow you do catch him pretty quickly in the crowd with the girl.
It's good directing. Yeah. I think that's what he does bring to it.
Any chance you think Sam Mendes comes back?
No.
Yeah, I don't think so.
You don't think he comes back? I think he comes back to wrap it up.
You do?
I think that Daniel Craig is like,
I think they,
let's finish
no,
it.
No, I think they get Martin Campbell back.
Oh, no. Really? I don't think that'll ever happen. Yeah.
Why? Because of Green Lantern? You think that no one's going to touch him or what?
No, because, all he wants to do is be known for Green Lantern.
But what about you get somebody like – who would be the new – I know Quentin Tarantino, they talked a little bit about him because he'd said he wanted to direct James Bond, which I don't think would have been good. I think it would have been
Quentin Tarantino. I didn't ask him about that last week on the Nerdist podcast.
Oh, my God.
But he just recently said that he's past that. He has come out and said, I'm past that. I wanted to – he only has two more films left. But, like, is there anybody new, like Mark Millar? Like, I really like The Last Kingsman. Who directed that?
Vaughn?
Like, yeah. Right. Like, yeah,
or
yeah,
Matthew Vaughn?
Or Matthew Vaughn, yeah. Like somebody like that. Would you get somebody like that? Because I think The Kingsman, like, that to me scratches a lot of my James Bond itch. Yeah. I mean, it's super violent and dirty and whatever. But
I think that's too slick with all the bullet time speed ramping and stuff. But not to say he couldn't do it otherwise.
Well, fucking Lee Tamarai with the speed ramping and Die Another Day was like...
But at least that was almost of its time.
I guess the question is, do they get a name director or someone more, like, less auteur?
No, I think they do name, and I think they're out of the business of not having a name director on these things. Now
they have to, right?
Yeah. Who would that be?
Who would you like to see?
Alberto, the guy that did Revenant and Birdman.
Oh my God. That would be amazing.
No, it's too much. Like, that's why Tarantino wouldn't have worked. Like, Bond is already enough style. I say the guy who directed Sicario and Prisoners.
Ooh.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That guy would make a great director.
I don't know his name, but
he's great.
Sicario is fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a perfect kind of guy.
Yeah.
That's because he can do dark.
Yeah.
He can. That's.
Let's do it. Let's get him on the horn.
If they give it to J.J. Abrams, I'll quit life.
Yeah, they might as well.
And Daniel Craig definitely coming back.
I think so.
I would say if he absolutely doesn't want to, I don't think they'd force him to, but I'm almost positive he'll never do more than one more.
Yeah.
I feel like he needs to close. I feel like if the if I'm Daniel Craig, I go, I feel like we wrapped it up. I feel like there's a part. Yeah, I feel like it's like that's the end of my story.
I think had this movie been as well received as Skyfall,
that's what I think. That would have been correct.
100%. I think if the producers are smart, they're giving him lots of time where they're not even calling him about little things. They're dealing with shit on their own. And then a few months down the road, they start to go, all right. And then he's had some time to relax and goes, okay, maybe we should do one more.
Yeah.
Get that guy from Prisoners.
I do believe that they were like, this will be like Skyfall. And they both walk away into the sunset.
Yeah.
And you would have felt, I would have felt super fulfilled.
Yeah.
I feel like that would have been a great, I thought it was a powerful ending.
Yeah. What about this, though? One last thing. I've noticed in the PR, there's a new person who's been speaking, and it's Michael Wilson's son. And I think he's probably going to be the natural choice to take over. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. And so he's working on the films and he's doing interviews and stuff.
Does Babs not have a child?
I don't know. But maybe it'll be a team effort. You know?
Maybe bring in a different screenwriter, Wade and Purvis.
Although Barbara's not that old. Well, she can run it.
Yeah,
for
I hope
a
she runs
time.
It forever. Yeah. They did. And it was just John Logan, and they didn't like it so much that they begged Purvis and Wade to come back.
It's so confusing.
Oh, right. Yeah,
we
yeah.
don't know. Like, yeah. we for years have been laboring under the delusion
of who's
that
who's
Purvis and Wade
missteps.
Were just the dum-dums.
Right. And yeah. then, yeah.
Because they wrote Die Another Day and World's Not Enough, and we felt like, well, this is garbage.
Sometimes they have to, like, when you look at Pierce Brosnan, too, you're like, I feel like those movies reflect Pierce as much as they,
yeah.
they reflect the time,
right.
they reflect Pierce. There's something about those movies that just feel oily to me. And I feel like everybody was on the same page. Like, I don't think that, like, I don't think that Pierce Brosnan was like, God damn it. Why isn't my bong grounded? I yeah. think he would be like, fellas, I was thinking, what if the car was invisible and
no.
we went to an ISO to
no.
write it? And then, like, you know, he gets, and like, he's like, and I feel like he's vacationing with Barbara
no.
Broccoli. Like,
yeah.
I'm like, I have a great idea.
Yeah, I think he's
no.
just a positive sort of yes man guy. So anything they threw at him, brilliant.
Yeah,
let's do it.
Because he didn't even really. And again, I'm sorry, I'm always bad with
being
titles.
The Pierce Brosnan apologist on this podcast.
Don't do it.
Like, I feel like he doesn't even really carry over into the film being a prisoner of war.
I mean,
that's like a huge, crazy open, which I loved. And it was like, ooh, Bond is like a little dark. And I was like, no, he's fine. Like, five minutes later, yeah. like, bah, 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 bah.
But that, Die Another Day, those, that mirrors and that sort of beginning of him getting captured and then goes away for 6 months and then comes back. And then they don't quite trust him, kind of mirrors Skyfall.
Yeah, you could see the Purvis and Wade in there.
It's the same sort of thing where he goes away and then he has to come back and take tests and get examined and all that stuff. Same thing happens in Die Another Day. I just want a movie that, you know, if you're going to keep rehashing that, just rehash a mission.
Just one time.
Just once.
For us.
And my one final question to you both is simply this. Is there a world in which the next movie, if Daniel Craig continues,
mm-hmm.
Sean Connery just pops up for something.
Did you hear that the sort of corroborated rumor that Skyfall was originally not going to be his ancestral homeland? It was going to be a home for retired 00 agents, and that Connery was originally the Kincaid role.
I heard that Connery was Kincaid, but I did not know it was that.
Yeah, then they
So it was going to be Connery and Roger Moore.
Well,
like,
that was the theory.
Theoretically, Connery, Roger Moore, and
Tim Dalton.
But
that would
have
made a laughing stock out of that movie.
Oh, that would have been
the
dumbest.
But I do want to see that as a separate movie, no doubt.
But by the way, I would have loved to have had Kincaid just be Sean Connery, the keeper of the house, like this older groundskeeper.
Would have pulled you out of it too much.
Yeah.
You think so?
Really
so
just pulled you out of it way
too
much.
He looks so different though, right? I mean,
he does.
However, I think you could get away with it with like Dalton or Lazenby that are just – they're slightly less iconic. You know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So no, I would say no because –
takes you out.
Yeah.
All right. That's a bummer.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, I think Sean Connery's not doing anything for anybody.
No,
but
he's done.
No.
He's done.
He's done.
No favors for
it
the
It is
Broccoli.
Crazy that all the Bonds are still alive, though.
It is remarkable. Yeah.
They've never been all in the same room, right?
No.
That's
and it's
Blofeld's
not too
plan.
Late.
He wants them in there.
We're going to end with that.
All right.
Paul, I'm so glad you could join us
Thank
for this.
Thank you so much.
We'll
for
have
having.
You back on the next – whenever the next movie
Please.
Comes out.
James
we'll
Bonding.
Talk to trailer with
James
you guys.
Bonding will return in question mark.
Yeah, a long time from now, but we will be back. We'll check in periodically as long as there are Bond films.
As long as news
and podcasts
we're
and,
here you know this isn't going anywhere
all right Matt
now leaving nerdist.com
Hey, this is Arnie Niekamp from the improv fantasy podcast Hello from the Magic Tavern. I fell through a dimensional portal behind a Burger King in Chicago into the magical land of Foon, and I started a podcast. Season 3 has just begun with a brand new adventure to defeat the Dark Lord. If you're a new listener or you've fallen behind, Season 3 is a great jumping on point. And we've got great guests like Justin McElroy.
I sound like a fancy college professor. Eight nuts.
Rachel Bloom.
You all see my collection of men corpses and one woman.
Felicia Day and Colton Dunn.
You've seen me have intercourse with a variety of species.
It's a bummer.
Andy Daly.
You have the members of Genesis listed, but Phil Collins has crossed out and then circled and crossed out again.
Yes, I have killed Phil Collins twice.
Thomas Middleditch.
Jesus! I mean, Jazos! Ruler of the Eighth Circle!
And that's just the beginning. Season 3 of Hello from the Magic Tavern is out now. Listen in Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.